It's time to reboot your credit card with Apple Card. Apple Card gives you up to 3% unlimited daily cash back. It's real cash you can spend right away. No need to wait, and wait for rewards. Apply now on the Wallet app on iPhone to see your credit limit offer with no impact to your credit score. Subject to credit approval, daily cash is available via an Apple Cash Card or as a statement credit. See Apple Card customer agreement for terms and conditions. Apple Cash Card is issued by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Accepting an Apple Card after your application is approved will result in a hard inquiry, which may impact your credit score.
Hey, welcome to The Screenwriting Life. I'm Meg LaFauve.
And I'm Lorianne McKenna.
We are professional screenwriters. We've worked together as a team and separately. We've worked on studio and indie films, live action and animation, from my work on Inside Out and Captain Marvel
to my work in Pixar's story department on Up, Brave, and Inside Out. We are here to share our insights on the craft of screenwriting and also the life. How to not only survive the ups and downs, but thrive. We want to help you become the best screenwriter you can be and to reassure you that you are not alone on this journey.
Hey, TSL family, just a couple of housekeeping announcements before we dive into the show. The first is that I'm kind of smack dab in the busyness of the festival circuit for Always Lola, so first of all, apologies that this is going up a day late, and I ask for your continued grace as just I'm navigating travel and recording and producing remotely, which is something I'm usually not doing. So thanks for your patience. We are going to do our best to be getting the show out weekly and as high quality as possible while I'm kind of slammed, gratefully slammed by all the busyness surrounding my film, Always Lola. I'm connected to that. Two very exciting festival announcements dropped this week. One is that we are playing the Boston Film Festival on Saturday, September 24th. The ticket link for that should be up very soon. We're playing in the evening at 9:15 at the Boston Commons, so it's a very exciting screening. The second is the Heartland Film Festival, which is in Indianapolis. So for any of our Midwest listeners, I'd love to have you there. You can follow all of the information you need to know on our website, which is www.alwayslolafilm.com. But I know we have listeners all across the country, and I will be at both of those screenings, and I would love to meet you. So if you're East Coast or Midwest and want to check us out at either Boston or Heartland, I'd love to meet you. You can find info on the website. And without further ado, let's jump into the show.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show.
So today we're going to talk about adaptations, adapting from existing material. I think most screenwriters have thought about this or done it. So we're going to talk about both the creative and practical aspects of this.
But before we get into that, let's talk about our weeks, or what we like to call adventures in screenwriting. Lorianne, so good to have you back.
How was your week? It was good. I have been very busy and honestly overwhelmed with work and life and all of it. And so I had to work very hard to make my life much smaller. And so I just felt too stretched with too many things going on, too many things pulling me. So first thing I did was get off social media, which changed my brain almost instantly. It was like all of a sudden I wasn't connected to so many other things going on that didn't need me. Like I was putting myself in a position of like, everybody needs me, everyone's counting on me, I have to know what's going on. But once I decided to pull myself off, and I did everything, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, whatever, just my life felt more real. Like my life, like I was like, oh, this is my real life. And I love so many of the people that I interact with on Facebook, and that's not it. It's that I just really need to focus on like my husband and my daughter and my work and me and my dog. You know, it was like this revelation. Oh, right. My life, you know, the real life. I have a lot of projects right now in different stages. And one of them, we are waiting for the green light, which I hope happens.
There we are, fingers and toes.
Before I leave for Italy at the end of the month. But that has been kind of a big deal for me to be off Facebook. And that's not to say I'm off it forever. You know, I did pop on this Sunday and looked at it for 15 minutes and I was like, meh. You know, because I get very obsessed. I think I was addicted, you know, so I have to be very careful because huge time suck for me. Like I can waste hours, which is just not what I need to be doing. But my daughter's back in school, which means I do not have my whole family at home with me all the time, which is also really great. I have time to work and focus. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what's been going on.
It's a lot.
I've been in a growth, learning, challenging myself kind of space, trying to get rid of the things that don't add to my life, which is
boundaries,
hard to look
man.
At.
So much of our life now in this modern age is about boundaries and even realizing we even need them, don't have them, even on stuff we like, you know?
Yeah.
Like
So I had to do this thing where I have like identified the things that don't add or things that make me unhappy and take them out. And then I'm like, okay, well, I need to fill that space up now with things that do add and do make me happy, right? I have to do both. So that's what I'm working on right now. Like, what do I want to fill that time with?
Other than eating cookies.
But one of the things I've done, this is so silly, is I have a very complex skincare routine now. It gives me great sense of control and power. And it makes me feel like I'm doing something positive for myself.
I love it.
Very silly, but I've never had that before. So I've all these
serums and trying to do the same thing. And this is not about giving me pleasure or anything, but because it doesn't. But I decided that when I feed my dog while he eats, I do 10 squats and 10 push-ups.
Nice.
Because I have to feed the dog every day, right? Like my brain needs something I do every day to even remind me to do it. That means, Lauren, the next time you see me in person, I'm going to be ripped. No, not really.
I'm sure. But how this relates to career and screenwriting and all of that is that I realize I need a schedule. And I have to have the discipline to stick to it. And having my daughter back in school is really helpful. I get up, I take her to school, I come home, I walk the dog, I work out. Because if I don't work out, I'm kind of messy. So working out really helps. And then I have to sit down and work right away. So that's what not having social media on my computer does, is that I can't spend like hours checking on people and responding to people. It's like, no, you got to start working. And if I don't start work right away, if I don't have a project on the deck, then my day gets kind of squirrely. So like this morning I came and I was like, oh, I have to do this. And I wrote some episode ideas for a project I'm working on. And I was like, okay, right. Then that sets me up so that I'm not dreading. I'm not putting off. I'm not anticipating how hard it's going to be. I just sit down and do it.
Awesome.
Because I'm trying, I've been doing it for 2 weeks now, and I'm hoping I can maintain that, but I have to have that structure. Just like my daughter loves structure, kids love, I have to have structure too. Because then at the end of the day, I feel like I've accomplished something, and I have accomplished something. And that's how I'm getting more work done too. That's why taking social media off the table and giving myself some discipline. You know, I've tried this before. We'll see how this goes. But I'm working really hard at it.
It's good. It's really, really good. Jeff, how was your week?
I want to say first, like, thanks for sharing that, Lauren. It's funny. I'm feeling this healthy sense of conviction that I might want to do the same thing. So I'm really glad that you shared that, because I'm like, oh yeah, I waste time, you know, just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And it's hard. Part of me thinks, you know, we're both extroverted, Lauren. Well, I don't want to speak for you, but I think you've said that on the show before. It's hard sometimes as an extroverted writer, because the job necessitates a lot of alone time. You know, it's you and your characters and you on the page. And sometimes I feel like social media creates like a false sense of social life. And that can be a nice way to feel like you're around people. So I totally get it. What I've been trying to do, and I'm not patting myself on the back or anything, but I've been trying to have like one coffee a week with someone. And that can be like professional or personal, but it's a way for me to like remember to like be with people, just because sometimes that cannot be a thing when you're a writer, which is sometimes tricky. But thank you for sharing that. I feel like I'm excited about the idea of trying to do the same thing. You guys are probably sick of hearing it, but I'm still doing the movie. And we had a really, really exciting screening over the weekend. It was actually at the TCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood, which is pretty cool because that's like a pretty famous theater. And, you know, I will say, I was speaking to one of my wife's coworkers who was just like really encouraging me. He's like, listen, you're going to go home and think about who you met and what you need to do and how to follow up. But like, he's like, just take a minute and like, tell yourself that you're standing in the Chinese theater. You just watched a movie, The Packed House, and they liked it. Like that, a lot of people won't get to do that. So I took a minute and enjoyed it. And it was really a wonderful screening, but it is funny. And I'm hoping this connects to writing, because I know I've been talking a lot about the movie. I'm excited to get back to the page, but there's this constant pressure with your career where, like, when a success happens, you feel like you have to leverage it right away or parlay it into the next thing or, like, what's next? And, you know, I met some great people at the screening and was lucky to have a couple kind of exciting big shot people come and, you know, shake their hand and they seemed to like it. And of course, like, immediately after the conversation, you're like, I have to follow up with them. And like, how do I do it elegantly? And like, what should the email say? How long should it be? What am I asking for? And that stuff can be hard, but, you know, I think you have to remind yourself that, like, just because you have a victory doesn't mean that the next step has to be an Oscar, right? Like, you can have this feeling like the next thing has to be a very tangible, immediate, huge growth thing for your career, but you don't realize that you're planting these seeds that will pay off in 6 months or come later down the road. And, you know, I'm putting all this pressure on myself to handle each of these follow-up emails perfectly. But I think, like, saying thanks that they were there, maybe trying to grab a coffee or something, can be enough. And, like, I'm letting that be enough and giving myself grace if I don't have the perfect networking instincts to leverage every successful opportunity you have in your career. But it's a lot.
it's not going anywhere. Yeah, it's not going anywhere, all of those contacts, if you don't do it immediately. You know, they're still going to know who you are and that they saw the movie, even if it's a month from now, right?
Or 2 years from now, right? That's the funny thing about this career, is it's like certain things circle back in a way that you wouldn't realize. But it is trying to just sometimes enjoy those victories rather than panic about how they can get you another thing, you know?
Because that is the good part. Like, standing in the Chinese theater is the good part. You gotta enjoy it, because you're just going to, the wheel's going to turn. You're going to be back into the blank page. So I'm so glad. I'm so glad you did that.
But yeah, that's exactly right. It's just enjoying it.
Yeah, I think it's so great, and congratulations. And part of it is you've made the connection. You've leveraged it, because they came and they met you and they saw it. And then 2 years from now, somebody could come to them and say, "Oh, I have this project," and they'll think of you and the movie, right? It's we've all had that, right? Like, years later, someone comes back and was like, "Oh, I have this project. I was thinking about you for," and you're like, "Wait, what?" You know, this one conversation we had. So, you know, you've already done so much of it by doing the work of making the movie.
I mean, if there's agents or people like that circling, or who said hello and shook your hand, they might be the people I would follow up with quicker, only because agents, most of them have the attention span of rabbits, meaning there's so much coming in, they're always looking for the next thing. So if it's about representation, those I would not let percolate too long. The rest, producers, all that kind of stuff, you know, just enjoy it and don't worry about the timing of those. Yeah. Congratulations. That's so exciting.
Thanks. Well, Meg, how was your week?
My week was good and weird, because they announced Inside Out 2 at D23 this week.
Congratulations.
And, thank you. And, so it was wonderful and fun. And there was a bootleg copy on the web of Amy Poehler doing it. So I got to see it. It was super fun. You know, it's super fun. It's also, though, pretty weird, because I am not off social media. And not only am I not off of it, but I start to read comments underneath the announcement. And of course, there's many, many people who are super excited and can't wait. And they're so happy. And of course, but your brain doesn't remember any of those. It just starts to see, why is Disney doing sequels? I thought Pixar was never doing a sequel again. I'd rather see Moana 2. Please don't ruin this. The bar's too high. You can never do it. You'll never be able to make it as good as the first one. You know, it's like the voices in your head have manifested outside of yourself, and you're writing the script. Like, I had to work this weekend, and I'm literally writing the script as I'm also reading all of this stuff. So, you know, they're talking about something that I'm still literally trying to create on a blank page. Like, I'm literally staring at a blank page thinking, what is this scene? How are we getting into this? How do we connect back to that? Does this even work? Oh, let's go read more comments. So, I mean, I did send it to Lorianne, and she was like, stop doing that right now. Stop reading that, which I did.
Well, I give you a whole list of things to do, right?
I ate a lot of cookies.
Drink water.
Yeah, I just eat cookies, list, which is, okay. I know, it's stupid. And my butt's getting bigger and bigger. But I did that. And then what I found interesting is I really didn't want to watch the Emmys. And I don't know why. And I realized I had a little FOMO. I just, you know, my passion projects, both of them are series for television. And I just have not had time to do the work I want to do on them. And my producers are like ready and like, it's all set for me to do it. I just have to. And so I just felt a little bit like FOMO, but even more than that, upset at myself for not having, I let myself down by not doing these passion projects. And I just, you know, you're just like, I don't know. So it just, it was interesting to catch myself beating myself up and feeling like,
that sounds hard.
Let yourself down, but hard. It is life. I mean, life is, you have kids. My kid had a medical condition this past week and, you know, stuff happens. And unfortunately that's why they're called passion projects, because sometimes they get pushed to the back.
What if you reframe it so that you're like, yes, I had this FOMO and I feel bad, but maybe this is an opportunity to like be inspired. An hour a week, you can work on it.
I you know, I've tried so much. I've tried slacking with our wonderful group, and I've tried, which then I guess get too tired to wake up. And then, but I know CBD gummies, by the way, have changed my life. But in terms of being able to actually go to sleep, which is helping my brain and my anxiety and everything, because I can actually sleep. Yeah, I don't know if I can, not right now. I can't promise an hour a week. We're working on the weekends. I'm working so hard and so fast. So I just have to let it be. I just have to let it be what it is. And then the last thing I'll say is that everyone knows my son's in college, and I get these funny little texts like, my brain is fuzzy. What's happening? I can't think. And I dig into what's happening. Are you eating vegetables? You know, that kind of stuff. But then it's also, you know, I think going to college is like any artistic endeavor, especially when you're emerging, which is your expectations in your head of not just your projects, but you and your ability as an artist are so, there's a gap when you actually start doing it. And he's seeing the gap and it's starting to fuzz him out, because his brain is like, what's that gap? Holy, then who am I, kind of thing. And of course there isn't a gap. It's just normal. You learn stuff by doing, right? You're not a god. You actually are going to get notes like every other artist in the world. So I just think doing art is seeing yourself in the art with the notes, and that gap between what's in your head and that expectation of yourself and of the work versus what you do. And I was just trying to convince him, it's the people, this is where most people quit. And what you got to do is you just have to push through the gap. You just have to get over it by doing it, write it badly, do it. And when you get to the other end of this, your brain will learn that not only is what you've done more complex, more real, more human, more compelling than what you had in your head, because what you had in your head wasn't real. And all of the kind of struggle and challenge and dealing with the gap is the vulnerability and the stuff that needs to go into the work. There's a reason it exists, and just get through to the other side. Of course, at which point he said, or I could go have a beer. And I was like, or you could go have a beer. No, he can't, because he's underage. So we just started sending back little emojis about what it looks like to overthink, because that's also part of being an artist. But it was just, it's wonderful to have him out in the world reminding me, you know, me reminding him that yes, it's because you're an emerging artist, but also guess what I did this weekend? Saw the gap between what I want this to be and what everybody's expecting it to be and what it's turning out on the page. And you just got to sit there and be like, there it is. There's the gap. It's nothing personal. It doesn't mean anything about me personally. No one's going to judge it. Everybody at Pixar knows the gap. Just keep writing. You just have to keep writing, as our slogan says. All right. So that's my week. Jeff, my least favorite part, because yet my favorite part, because I get to hear the voices of our listeners. Of course. So
here's what I would challenge you with, is you've been faced with the outer critics of people who don't feel like they're on your team. Remember all these people who are so on your team.
Oh, that's so good.
So as you all know, one of the best ways that you guys can help us is by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. What that does is that bumps our show up on the algorithm and helps other people find our show. So you might hear your review read on air if you share it with us. And again, it's just super, super helpful. So thank you so much to all of you who have done so. I'm going to start with F Love Photo, who says, better than therapy. I came for writing advice and found that, plus the most honest, raw, and emotionally challenging discussions. I feel like I'm finding new ways to think about even things within my life and how that touches art, and it's deep. Would recommend to anyone who's interested in writing, movies, and just hearing stories and learning about storytelling. You get all of it. What a great review. Thank you so much to F Love Photo. I feel the same way. I feel like Meg and Lorian are my second set of parents in Los Angeles, and I'm so grateful to both of you. All right, up next we have Story to Rewrite, Instant Motivation. They're flamethrowers for writer's fumes. I'm talking bonfire creating muses that bring motivation and belief to a writer's spirit. Not only that, they're funny, knowledgeable, and vulnerable at times. They make me feel like a friend, like I'm just hanging out, sitting next to them. And then they just turn to me and look directly into my writer's soul. They pluck out every fear, hope, worry, and dream and bring it into the light and put it on full display. I truly can't get enough of the heart and soul injected into each episode. My only regret is that I wish I found it sooner. Man, what a wonderful and lovely review. So thank you so much to Story to Rewrite for writing that. Beautifully written.
It's great to have our listeners be writers, isn't it? Because then when they when they write reviews, they're also eloquent. That's great. Thank you, guys.
Don't let that intimidate you. You can also just leave a 5-star review and say, awesome.
5-star review, like it. Great.
Like it.
So thank you so much to our listeners for your beautiful reviews, and keep them coming. We're at 610 and it's ambitious, but I want to get 1,000 by the end of the year. So let's see if we can do it.
It's time to reboot your credit card with Apple Card. Apple Card gives you up to 3% daily cash back on everything you buy. It's real cash that never expires or loses value. Use it to grab a morning coffee or pay back a friend. Plus, there isn't a single fee. Apply now in the Wallet app on iPhone and start using it right away. Subject to credit approval, daily cash is available via an Apple Cash Card or as a statement credit. See Apple Card customer agreement for terms and conditions. Apple Cash Card is issued by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Variable APRs range from 13.24% to 24.24% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of August 1st, 2022.
Come on, guys. Come on. All right. So on to our topic of adaptation. Lorian, I know that you, let's just say adaptation could be a lot of things, right? It could be a novel. I've adapted video games. I've adapted comic books, remakes of other movies. Biopics are kind of an adaptation of a life. So I think we can talk about all of those things. But I know, Lorian, that you recently adapted a book. You wanted to start and talk about it?
Well, I adapted this book a long time ago into a feature. It has lived several lives. I think so I've adapted kids books, and I'm working on a comic book adaptation right now. And the feature that I adapted from a book, I think the biggest part for me was understanding or trying to figure out what parts need to stay and what parts I can take out and what that means. Like, why did I resonate with the material in the first place? And in that book, I had Meg, I think you gave me this advice. You're like, you have to kill the author. You have to kill the writer. The book is your partner. It was like, oh, right. The book is my partner, not the author. Like, I was so worried about changing things in the book in order, because a book is a beautiful thing, but it's not literally a feature. Like, you can't just take it and the scenes in that order and make it a feature. Especially this book, it's a first person narrative. And so trying to find the narrative spine in it, I had to make some changes, and it was really scary and really hard. And there was a lot of crying and chips, but it was a very big lesson for me. And I'm glad I learned it the hard way, because now I can look at something and be like, okay, I'm choosing this IP for a reason, because I personally resonate with it. What is the truth of this? I can already see the truth in it, or else it's not worth me, my truth, or else not worth me taking the project on. And then figuring out between me, the IP, the IP holder, if they're involved in the project, the producer, sort of everybody, what the pieces are that can't change, and then what I can change. And then having more conversations about, well, if I change this, then this might need some it's a negotiation. It's a constant negotiation, but the IP is your partner, which is how I like to look at it, because I like working with partners. So Yeah. And the feature came out really well. I'm really proud of it. And right now, it's a little bit moving forward, and it could go anywhere from it could stop today dead in its tracks, or you know, I could win an Oscar for best adapted screenplay, anything in those, in that spectrum, right?
Yeah, there so, we go.
But I think the scariest part, and I've talked about this on the show, is when my manager sent my script to the book author's agent and the author, and they read it. I was terrified because I had worked so hard to kill the author in my head so that I could do what I needed to do to make it a movie. And then here I was sending it to them. And I wrote a letter, but that was really, really scary. I survived.
And you survived and the author didn't like it?
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, yeah. Great. You have my blessing. Yeah. Like notes. It was just, you know,
the authors who, are the greatest in terms of even for themselves are kind of understand that they, when they give rights away, that person now is using almost that as paint to paint a different picture, because it's a different way to communicate and tell story. Like literally it's from internal mm-hmm. to visual to, so those are the happiest authors, I think, who realize that they just have to not get involved. It's funny. I just got sent a short story in which the author is one of the producers. And it's one of the reasons I passed, not because of anything about this person. I don't know this person. This person might be amazing. But on the list of cons, I was like, that's really going to be hard. That's might be great. It might actually, when you got in there, be a bonus. But generally, in a general way, that's an added hard thing. Like if you're doing a biography and you're really, really close to the person and they're involved, great. And yet at some point you have to start pulling away from that and put up the boundary. I mean, so I think of adaptations like paint. I have to paint a new picture. And there is, like you said, in a way, there's a ruthlessness about it, you know, of because you love the author so much and you love what they wrote so much. It was so inspiring. You so want to do honor to it, but you do also have to be a bit ruthless because now it's going to become yours. And there's a kind of ownership that has to happen about, well, mm-hmm. there might be multiple thematics in here and you're pulling on this string, right? There might be multiple character point of views, but you need, especially if it's a feature, a main character. So you're going to start to combine characters, give things to your main character, you have to be really, really willing to change it. You know, I worked with a playwright and that was really interesting because she saw a story through dialogue, right? So if you're adapting a play, it's very, very different because film is about the visual medium. It's about behavior. Now, TV can, of course, be more play-like in terms of the dialogue-heavy scenes and getting to people through dialogue. But you really have to start shifting what the medium is, from a comic book to film to, yes, which can have many kind of comic book-y elements to it now, given where we are with storytelling. But it still has to have all the basis of the feature film structure and work in that story engine that we talk about. So, mm-hmm. You know, like and then crazy things can happen when you get too loyal. Like I worked as a producer on a wonderful movie by Keith Gordon called Waking the Dead by Scott Spencer. And he was very, very loyal to the book. Of course, it's Scott Spencer. It was amazing. It was an amazing book. But, you know, in the edit room, the first cut was 4 hours. Because you know it was two movies, right? So you have to start. That's the other reason sometimes as a feature, you got to start distilling it down, looking for what are those crucial narrative points from the story you want to tell, because it's still your story emotionally, thematically. What do you want to say with this, right? And adapting a comic book recently with my husband Joe Forte. We were working with the director and there were lots and lots of conversations about what is this about for you? There's a lot of different things in here in this comic book. And we could talk about set pieces till the cows come home, but what is this about for you? What is this character arc? And then we can pick and pull from the comic book to support that. The other interesting thing that can happen in adaptations is relationships can shift. Like I have, if you look at the shipping news, if you look at the book versus the movie, in the book, the main relationship is clearly with the love interest, Julianne Moore's character in the movie. But if you look at the spining structure of the movie, it's the daughter, right? And this is all substructural. I don't know that a viewer walking out of the movie theater would know that, but you as a creator, as a constructor, as a builder, as a storyteller, you have to start asking questions like that. Well, in this adaptation, what is the main relationship going to be? And it might shift from the book. So I think that all, it's really just using the story as inspiration and paint, and then finding the what's important to you and those narrative beats, and then get to rebuild and create your own thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, in this novel that I adapted, I had to create a love interest. It's a YA story, right? I felt like you had to have a love interest. So I took a character that was not a love interest and I shifted him so he is, and I changed the ending. Full stop, changed the ending. For me, it's the same story. I needed it to have hope at the end. You know, for me, the kinds of stories I like to tell and what was important to me, I couldn't walk away from that without believing that there was some light in the darkness for the main character, which both pretty big, right? Pretty big. But yeah, I agree with you. But it's tricky. And just like any story, you get the book and you try something and you see, you have to do that ruthless thing where you see how far you can go away from it. What if this? Okay, that doesn't work. Then you come back a little bit, then you push away, then you come back, then you explore. It's not just, you don't just make decisions right off the bat because you have this amazing raw material. Some, it's more complicated in different ways. It's easier in some, but you're still going to be playing with, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. Ooh, I pushed too far on that. I think the one advantage you have, which I always love, is you have the characters up walking around and talking, so you get the rhythm of their speech. So it's easier to write for them. So in terms of voice authenticity with that character, it's like, oh, I know what they would do in the situation. You know, you have to make up whole new scenes. You have to, you know, it's not like it, if it only exists in the book, then you use it. So, but you sort of can, I feel like I just know them much quicker than if I'm in a discovery phase with my own project.
Oh yeah. I mean, I love adaptation for that reason, because the depth and the richness that you can feel on the script because of all the work that author did digging in. I mean, look at Game of Thrones, you know, the depth of that from coming out of those books and how much he set up and how much, I mean, it's a lot of it's based on the War of the Roses and history. And, you know, you can feel that in the series, the depth that he brought to that. So that's also why I love adapting. I mean, the other thing that is covered under adaptation is biographies, right? Or based on a true life. And to me, the most important thing to think about when you're going to do a real life story, like when I worked for Jodie Foster as a producer, I felt like I'd read every female biography that had come into our office ever in the history of the world, because it's Jodie Foster. I think we got submitted the woman who dresses up as a Civil War soldier at least once a year. But, you know, again, a life, like let's use that, the woman who dresses up as a Civil War soldier came in once a year. And the question is, why is it yours, right? First and foremost, why is this such a burning, not from a social point of view, not from women's rights point of view, I'm not saying all that can't be in there, but emotionally, what human condition are you exposing that I'm like, well, I know this story and I've kind of read it in a lot of scripts, but wow, never like this. I've never seen it taken here. I've never seen someone be this daring, this emotionally insightful, telling me such an amazing story, right? So even the life is just the paint that you're going to use. Like I've said this before on the show, I'm sure Karen Blixen's life was not out of Africa. That is what Sidney Pollack has told many times, that story, right? If you look at his movies. But he saw within her life a thematic that he related to and could build. And the other thing that a lot of people do is they want to tell me the life. Like when I was a producer and I'd get stuff for Jodie, it's like she was born,
She did all this stuff, usually with men being mean to her. And then she walked to China and then she died, right? And while that might be incredibly fascinating, and we're all such better people that we know she existed, that's not a movie, right? Like, what piece, I personally think it's much better, or at least to consider doing a piece of the life that illuminates the whole life and illuminates thematically what you're going for that is beyond this person's life, that is somehow about all of our lives. Like, what is that slice, that piece that has all of that richness in it? And to be brave enough to even just do that as an experiment, because sometimes we can hold on to the training wheels of the whole life. It's a little scarier flying by the seat of your pants to just take this slice and really dig into it, really get into the depth and richness of that piece. So the wonderful teacher at AFI, Gil Dennis, wrote Walk the Line, a biopic of Johnny Cash. And he was describing how he's since passed away, which is a real loss. But he was describing to me how he really had trouble getting in, because Johnny Cash was alive, and people who are alive want you to tell the story the way they want you to tell it, right? They want their myth, their legend, or like what I talked about in my week, they want that expectation of them. They want that thing in their head. They don't want to see the gap, right? So what Gil did is he asked these five questions in order to dig deeper and get past the kind of biopickiness of it and find the thematic. So he asked Johnny Cash, what was the time he was the most terrified? And he said, when his father beat his mother. And he asked Johnny Cash the saddest moment of his life, which is when he hit his own wife. And the most shameful experience, which is when he couldn't protect his mother and brother, and when he hit his own wife. And the time when someone was the most angry at him, and he said when he hit his wife, and that she was pretty mad at him. And the moment when he was the most joyful, and he said when his wife took him back. So suddenly it goes from a biopic to a story about powerlessness. And the powerlessness he felt as a child, that in order to feel powerful, he actually then turned into the abusive man and hit his wife. So Cash might have needed connection and the feeling of power, you know, but what to avoid that powerlessness is suddenly what's generating the scenes, right? So suddenly fame and control feel like power, right? And control over June. And that starts to set up the relationship, that starts to set up why scenes are in the movie or why scenes are not in the movie. And the adaption of this life starts to center on those narrative dynamics. So the biography starts to center on those dynamics. So that's just that was such a cool way to hear how he approached adapting a life. And I think those questions can apply to any story, but certainly just to try to illuminate for you that an adaptation isn't a transference. You have to dig into it with what asking those kinds of questions about your character and yourself in relationship to this piece. And why do you feel such passion about it? Those are the great adaptations. And if you guys don't think that was helpful, we can cut it out. But I thought it was relevant.
Oh, I think it's really helpful. I think it's really, really helpful, especially because all those things are so connected, right? Shame, sadness, fear, joy, anger, right? All those emotions. You know, I'm telling you, you know, it's, you know, though they're such big trauma, right?
Well, and like, it does speak to what we talked about with Jen in terms of those coping mechanisms, right? To our vulnerability and how our brains start to try to keep us safe, start to create these coping mechanisms. Well, In the novel, you're going to get to go inside and really experience those coping mechanisms and what's happening. So your job especially as a feature writer, is how am I externalizing this into behavior, right? Because nobody's going to want your character to say it, especially too early, because then it's too, why are we watching the movie? Like, how is it coming into light, coming into awareness? And we have to meet them through that behavior of that coping mechanism. So it also starts to dovetail. It's all the same work, I guess. It's just you get the inspiration and the
and a lot of stuff to work out from the source material, but it is ultimately still the same work.
We talk about adaptation, right? You look at IP, a book, a comic book, a song, you know, something. There's also, you know, if you're hired to rewrite something, that's your source material. There are, of course, parameters about what you can and can't change. If you're working on a project with somebody, you have to find that meeting place in the middle. If you're show running a show you didn't create, it is that relationship is really important. If you're created a show and you're working with a showrunner, right, you have to figure out how to partner on that material in a way, like the created material is the IP, and then you guys have to work on that together. So there's so many different ways. It's not those things aren't adaptation, but they also require some similar skills, which is understanding what the assignment is, what the parameters are, why you're the only one who can tell that story in the way that you can tell it, what sparks with you in that story. So it's just a lot of the same things.
Well, and if you're working on an adaptation that has a producer, or if you're lucky enough with a director or even a studio, it suddenly becomes important that, you know, you're going to be pitching why, especially if they already own it, why you should be the one to adapt this. And they are going to want that personal take and your passion. And you're going to, you know, in today's world, you're going to have to really pitch the version. It used to be not in the day, but now this is the movie I see, and you're going to have to pitch it, right? And that's important. But you also need to do that because everybody needs to be making the same movie, because often this can happen. Often the producer sees a totally different movie in that book, right? So like using yours, like Lauren, you would be pitching, I need hope at the end, right? Well, if the producer saw it as a tragedy and loves that there's no hope, better know that up front, right? Like, those are all the questions that have to be asked, and digging into your own passion and what you need out of this adaptation and how you see it shaping and the journey before you even take the job. Because, and it doesn't matter, because even when you do that, you're going to get into the middle of it and realize, oh, wait, you wanted that? Like, it's just like, just part of the process too. But you try to do the best you can, but you're going to constantly be rechecking with people in terms of, because like I talked about, like that gap between what it, the expectation and what it is and how it's being written happens in every project, but especially in adaptations, because everybody involved already has a very clear idea in their personal brain what that expectation is. And your job as the writer is sometimes just be ruthless and say, that is a book. And I understand that the author's voice is so beautiful, but we can't fall in love with that, because that is not the movie, is not how it's written. The movie is the story, is the narrative. So let's dig into that. That had the spirit of the novel, of course, and that beautiful writing has to be in it. But ultimately, I mean, I worked on development as a producer when I was working for Jody, and we worked so hard on this adaptation, this book we all loved. Richter was the name of the author, and he was lovely. And finally, Jody, after I don't know how many drafts, was like, you know what I think? I think it's a good book. And I was like, it is. It's a good book. But we didn't know that until like five drafts in, to really start to see, oh, we love the writing. That's what we love. It's not the narrative. The narrative itself isn't standing up. It doesn't work as a film. And it just, you know, that's just part of it. Sometimes you just got to go walk the narrow road and find out. So those expectations are always coming in. Yeah.
Is the beauty of all narrative forms, right? A play can sort of follow different rules. A book gets to follow different rules. The screenplay has its own set of rules, right? So like, it's fun, it's exciting, right? Long form poetry, short stories, flash fiction, like all of it has its really special place and its own rules.
Yeah, and the other thing you have to be asking is if you're adapting something that's older, be that a remake of a movie or an old book or I don't know, whatever, you do have to ask, why is this modern? Because everybody that you will interact with when you try to take it to market is going to ask that question. What is modern feeling about this? And like, let's just say if Fleabag was a play, her looking at the camera and talking to you felt very modern, right? There's tons of stuff that felt modern in Fleabag. But, you know, you do have to ask that question. What makes this feel fresh and new, right? In your adaptation of that. While still keeping the thematics and all the stuff that you love, what's fun and new and entertaining about it? Which I know seems obvious, and yet somehow I forget sometimes as I'm thinking about, I'd love to adapt this.
The other thing to be careful with in an adaptation is to overcomplicate it, which I am guilty of, right? Like, oh, I'm really inspired by this material. Here is my take on it. And then I just keep adding and adding and adding, and it's not asking for that. And it's just complicating things. So then it's about, okay, and I have to do that. That's part of my process. And then I have to sort of pull out all those things and figure out what that simple solution that includes all the complexity I laid out there. But that is because you want to make it, how can I plus it? Well, what if it was this? And what if it was this? And then this? And then all of a sudden it's something that is unrecognizable and not the assignment, not what you were set out to do.
And I do the opposite, where I love the subtlety of novels so much. I love the nuance that, I'll put that nuance, that one beautifully nuanced moment where she moved the cup, except the reader's like, what's happening? Because I didn't build up all the stuff that was inside externally so that everybody knows. Oh, with the cup.
Yeah. And I'll have created the backstory of the woman who made the cup and where her family came from and what her belief system is, right? I've created this whole world of characters with a backstory, and it's like, no, actually, just throw the cup on the ground. You know what? The main character threw the cup on the wall. That's the moment, right? Instead of, it's so.
Yeah, that, either way. Yeah. And so if you are listening and you want to learn more about how to do this, I suggest you read a book, read the script of that book, and then watch the movie. And there'll be three completely different things. Because of course, the script to the movie, it changes again, right? So it's really going to now become the directors and those actors and based on what you did, but it's a new adaptation. In a way, it can also now become another adaptation. So like if you watch the Shipping News, read the script and watch the film, that's just one I used to give my students. So it's on the top of my head, but I'm sure there's tons and tons that you could do that with, and you'll learn. You can't even believe how much your brain is going to explode when you do that. Like you're going to be like, oh my God, I get it. So I highly recommend doing that.
I think The Princess Bride is such a good example because it has the same narrative device, the grandpa reading, but there's so much in the book that doesn't make it into the movie. They take just the right scenes that set the tone, that have the humor that we know, that anything else would have been extra or too much. But when you read the book and you loved it as much as I did, and you see the movie, there are those moments you miss and you're like, oh, they didn't include that moment. But then later you realize, no, it was the perfect for the movie. It's a different thing. Right.
Yeah,
that's hard
for one.
A lot of us. Who
that's
love
a real
books,
fun one. I mean, go look at the adapted nominees for the Academy and find the one you love the best and go read the book and then get your hands on the script and then watch the movie.
And
again.
In 2025, you'll have mine in that.
That's right. You can do it right. with the Laurians. Absolutely. Absolutely.
2025, 2024. How long does it take a movie these days? Make a movie. I don't know. A couple months? What do you
have,
Jeff?
Yeah.
How long?
Jeff, do you have anything to add?
Just a practical question. For our writers who are interested in adapting IP that exists, would you recommend they get the rights?
Someone should have the rights. Mm-hmm. I think adapting a book that's like you just pick up and read in the bookstore is dangerous.
Don't do that. You'll spend years and years on it and then you can't get the rights and now you're screwed. You can do public domain or you go get the rights. And the way you get the rights, I had a girl when I taught producing who got so good at this, she's made her living at it now ever since. You reach out to the author, usually through their publisher, and you send, which you can just see on the book, right? There's the book, and you just call the publisher, and they find out who reps the book in that publisher. If they have an agent, even better, but not always able to find that. So you send the author a note through their publisher or their agent. And the publisher, by the way, will tell you if it's available or not, and rights may not be available. You send them a note of your passion for it. Your incredible passion. Now, if it's a new hot book, you're probably not going to get it. I mean, you might. This old student of mine was really good. She would fly there and give impassioned speeches in person, and she usually got it. But generally, if it's an older book, you all have a better chance. And you passionately talk about the adaptation and what it means to you. And, you know, it's going to be in line with hopefully what the author sees. And then you get the rights by legally getting a lawyer to write you up the 2-page legal document. I think you have to give them a certain amount of money for it to feel for it to be real. I don't know what that is. Your lawyer can tell you, $500 or something, or 100. I can't remember. You can get you can do something called a shopping agreement where they're giving you it for a very low amount of money, the rights to go out and pitch it. Obviously, you're going to do that if you have more, you're more established and can get in those rooms. But if you're going to write it as a spec, you have to get the rights. And I know you're like lawyers and that, but come on, it's going to cost you not an arm and a leg, but you have to do it because the outlay of your time when you don't have the rights, don't do it.
From experience, I can tell it's don't do it. I found myself in a situation where I was unclear on who had the rights and it did not go well for me.
Yeah, so you got to make sure you say that person when they say they have the rights, right, great, show me the document that has the pieces that the signatures on it. Don't do it until you see the document because I don't know, it's Hollywood, people lie, people schmooze, people blow smoke. So please have the rights.
Also, if you call an agent or, just call the one time because the more calls they get, the more they think people are interested and the price goes up.
That's true.
I love that. What a great, just like inside
baseball.
Yeah, because I asked my manager to check on rights for something and he's like, who's calling, you or me? Only one of us is calling. I was like, okay, you call.
It's like when you, I don't know if y'all know this, when you check flight schedules to book your ticket, if you check multiple times, they'll actually jack the price up on your own browser.
That happened to me the other day. I was like, I'm actually jacking up the price because I keep looking every day for how much it is. And I'm showing them that there's so many people interested in this flight.
And do you know what? Here's the secret. This is just unrelated, but a tip for our listeners. If you open an incognito window, it doesn't use cookies. And so the prices will actually be the market price and not your own price for the browser. It'll be a different price.
So you mean that little private thing?
Yeah. Open a private tab.
My God, that's the best piece of advice of this whole podcast.
I'm actually very upset about this, having just purchased a ticket to Italy.
Well, now you know for next time. I'm like, you guys are giving like great advice practically about how to adapt material. And I'm like, did you know that if you open a private window,
it's the best advice of the whole thing. Go ahead, everybody jump on Facebook and tell them it's the best advice of the whole thing.
Meg, when you mentioned reading a book, reading the script and watching a movie, I think like it's a cliche answer, but Sorkin has some really interesting adaptations. Obviously, The Social Network took the whole story of Mark Zuckerberg's life and packed it in. It's a very long script, but still into a shorter amount of time. And I think even more astutely, like the adaptation of Steve Jobs that he did, where, he took a 1,000-page biography and instead chose to tell Steve Jobs' story through 3 specific product launches. So he selects 3 unique days in Steve Jobs' life and how those actually have to do with his relationship with his daughter. So it's like,
and there's the pitch.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, so that's
his take. This book's 1,000. We're never going to be able to do the whole thing, but here's how I would do it. 3 product launches and it's about him and his daughter.
Yeah.
And so I get it.
He's a great, even the new Lucy movie, he didn't tell Lucille Ball's whole life. He chose 1 week where a story of her possible connection to communism was released in the newspaper. And like, that was in some ways a much more truthful telling of Lucille Ball's life than an entire movie would have been. So we're aiming for truth. And oftentimes truth is much more found in small observations of people's life than grand ones. So.
Love it. Perfect. More beautifully said than I said. I love it.
All right.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't yet, please join our TSL Facebook group. It's a beautiful place to meet other writers and find additional support outside of the show.
And remember, you are not alone and keep writing.
Thanks for tuning in to The Screenwriting Life. We love our community and we want to get to know you even better. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/thescreenwritinglife or email us at thescreenwritinglife@gmail.com to have your question considered for the show.
You can also suggest topics by emailing us there. Also, we'd love for you to drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. Even if we don't read your review on air, trust me, we have read it, and not only does it mean the world to us, but it helps other people find the show. We've always been driven by mission and mentorship, and reviewing our show helps expand that mission. And of course, until next Sunday, happy writing.